Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
Subscribe, won't you? YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications. We have StuDoesMerch.com, StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code Stu10 as well to get 10% off your merch order. Rob Eno is here with the latest on the great Biden backlash. The Democrats continue to suffer an identity crisis. We'll try to figure out who their current leader is, if anyone. We're going to start by doing Afrikaner immigrants. Interesting story here. What do you know? Let me start with the border here first, though, because it kind of sets up why we're hearing about this. What to know about the Supreme Court arguments in the birthright citizenship case? This is going on at the Supreme Court right now. What should you know? Well, honestly, it seems less about birthright citizenship than about these nationwide injunctions, which are a big problem. We went back and forth today. We of course, won't know immediately what the result is, but it is interesting. It rides on this one part of the 14th Amendment and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. All persons born and naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. So that phrase, some people believe on the right in particular that that does not apply to illegal immigrants. There's some obviously disagreement on this. This was 120 years ago. They initially ruled on this particular issue. Are they subject to the jurisdiction thereof? Well, I mean, they have to follow the laws in theory once they're here. Like they could be arrested and things like that, but they can't be like drafted into the military, right? So they're not fully under the jurisdiction of the United States. And that's kind of where the quibble point is. So this could be a big reason, ruling probably going to be a lot more narrow, probably more about injunctions than anything else. But that's just one of the ways the left is going after Trump on the border. Yesterday we did what are Trump's S-tier top policies, which are the ones that are rating best with the United States citizens. And, it's border, it's crime prevention, it's national security. That's where Trump's strength is right now. The economic thing, which was the other side of his strength kind of coming into the election, has faded away due to tariffs and other things, but that may bounce back at any point. But the border thing is kind of unequivocal, right? He's made a big difference here. Let me show you this chart. This goes back to 2000. Everything this century. And there's a couple things I want you to notice as we look at this chart, and I'll explain it to you if you happen to be on podcast. Numbers were very high early in the Bush era. They continued to fall all the way through to the Obama era, and were near its lows at that point. One thing that changed, even though they had risen a little bit to about 50,000 a month, under Barack Obama, one of the things that changed Donald Trump wound up winning the election in 2016 and going into 2017 was the tone. He didn't build the wall or anything yet. He hasn't done that at all, or at least not completely yet. But the one thing he did do is change his tone and say, "Hey, we don't want you to come here illegally." That was like a big thing at the time, and you see that drop from the 2016-2017 era to the lowest up until that time because of that tone shift. Now, because policy didn't back that up, you do see it rise as we go into certainly into 2019. It actually peaked pretty high in 2019, came back down pretty quickly, though, and then bottomed out again in the COVID era. The second thing to notice about this chart, look how high the Biden era is. It is as high or higher than any other time in the entire century. Like all 4 years are massively high the entire time. At the very end, when he starts running for re-election, it does fall some because he puts in some of the policies that Trump already had in place, but still nowhere near to the point, which the third thing I want you to notice is where we are now, 8,400 in a month, the lowest it has been at any point since the year 2000. And that largely, again, is going to be somewhat like policy changes, but also tonal changes, right? Saying to the people of South America and Central America, we don't want you to come here. Don't come here. If you come here, we're going to deport you. We're going to send you back. You might go to prison. You might even go to an El Salvadorian prison. You don't want that. So that's kind of what has happened so far. And so this policy is massively successful for Trump. They have to try to eat away at it. So what do? Well, they start going after individual cases. I kind of alluded to the Garcia case in El Salvador, the Maryland father. We talked at the top about the Supreme Court case. Oh, gosh, he's trying to stop you from being able to become a citizen. The next one they're going after is this Afrikaners situation. White South Africans, known as Afrikaners, granted a refugee status by Trump. What we know, President Trump signed an executive order in February, establishing refugee status for Afrikaners, the white ethnic minority in South Africa that created and led the system of racial segregation known as apartheid. As part of the executive order, the Trump administration created an expedited path for Afrikaners to resettle in the United States, even as the administration has barred most refugees from countries afflicted by war and famine. President Trump has equated efforts by the South African government to undo racial inequalities to anti-white discrimination. Now, there's a lot, it's a loaded sentence from the New York Times there. He said on Monday the Afrikaners were victims of a genocide. Farmers are being killed. He told reporters, they happen to be white. Whether they're white or black makes no difference to me. White farmers are being brutally killed and the land is being confiscated in South Africa. So that's kind of the baseline situation. And we've talked about this issue over the years. There's a lot to it. There are claims of really widespread, you know, genocide type situations. Also, there's just also been known cases of, you know, brutal murders. And there have been laws passed that would allow the government to take some of the land from these white Afrikaners. You know, the government tries to claim that none of this has actually happened yet. There are doubts about the severity of the security situation that prompted the president to expedite the resettlement of Afrikaners. Trump's executive order directly mentioned a controversial South African land seizure law enacted in early 2025 that allowed the country's government to take land without offering the owners any compensation where it is just and equitable and then in the public interest to do so. So far, the South African government has said no land has been seized under the law. But it got passed in early 2025. It's currently mid-2025. Like, it's not like this has been 30 years of a peace, right? Like, this law was just passed. Why would you pass a law like that? It's like eminent domain, except you don't get paid. It's really, really bad. And of course, that just is heightening these tensions between these groups. There's also been many reports of crime over the years against these particular people. And in addition to that, constant social media traffic, right? Like, this is a big part of this in that there's a lot of people in South Africa who are saying they want to kill these people. Now, that doesn't mean they've killed them. Doesn't mean they're really going to do it. But I don't know. I feel like when someone says they're going to kill me, leaving is a pretty decent option if it's possible. Now, all of this is fascinating because of the reaction to it. I think it's been 59 people from South Africa. It is not that big of a story, honestly. Like, 59 people come in from other countries all the time. We don't even notice it, right? These 59 people have been very controversial because everyone's pushing back against them as if they did something wrong. The Episcopal Church says it won't help Trump resettle white South Africans. The church presiding bishop, Sean Rowe, said in a letter that U.S. refugee admissions program, which the church's resettlement ministry participated in for decades, has essentially shut down since January with no refugees arriving and hundreds of staff laid off. And several weeks ago, the Trump administration told the church that it would be expected to resettle the white Afrikaners under the terms of its federal grant. Again, if this isn't entirely true that it's been totally shut down, but if it were, you'd have plenty of room for these 59 people, wouldn't you? Unless for some reason you don't want to bring those people in. Rowe said the church wouldn't do so given the highly unusual manner in which the federal government selected the white South Africans, who received preferential treatment over many others and who have been waiting in refugee camps or dangerous conditions for years. He said instead the church would end its refugee settlement grant agreements with the government by the end of the fiscal year in September. J.D. Vance, by the way, just responded with one word. Crazy. And it is pretty freaking crazy. By the way, J.D. Vance was on the radio show today, so worth going back and listening to that. I think it was an hour three, if I remember right. I don't know. They all bleed together. But it was hour three, I believe. Go back and listen to J.D. Vance on radio earlier today. South African president is now criticizing the Afrikaners seeking refugee status in the U.S. President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa said the white South Africans who left for the United States after being granted refugee status by President Trump were cowardly as tensions mount between the two countries. They are running away from a duty to help South Africa help. Good heavens, I can't read today. They are running away from a duty to help South Africa solve its own problems, Mr. Ramaphosa. I can read Ramaphosa, but I can't read normal. Told reporters on Tuesday, adding, when you run away, you are a coward. Okay, well, there you go. Now, of course, we had to have the mockery from the left. They have to go after Trump at every single turn, which makes life so enjoyable, doesn't it? America is the land of opportunity for white South Africans. Oh, man, the burn is real on that one. Again, just kind of typical nonsense from the Atlantic. Now, I will say, in their defense, Elon's done pretty well here. So some white South Africans, it is the land of opportunity. But, you know, is it really necessary to point that out? Is their color really that important to their importation to the United States? It's not important to me when we import people from the Middle East or people from South America, Central America, or Africa, whatever their color is. I don't really care. It's not really important. It's important to the distinction of them being allowed in. We'll get into the details on that in a second. But it's not really important to me as a citizen. Like, bring in whoever is supposed to come here when they come here legally. That is the key. That is the key. And this is, of course, something that is being encouraged by our government with the South African immigrants. So that is not a problem, I think, for most people in the United States, but the Atlantic being the exception. White South African Afrikaner refugees arrive on U.S. government chartered plane. Here's the picture of them, by the way. They look happy and happy to be here. So welcome to the country. A group of 59 Afrikaners who have been given refugee status by the Trump administration arrived at Dulles Airport outside Washington, D.C. on Monday on a charter flight paid for by the U.S. government. The Afrikaners, descendants of mainly Dutch colonists, left Johannesburg on Sunday night. They were seen at the airport in Johannesburg with carts full of suitcases, but declined to speak to the media. This is a big controversy, apparently. Because they're like, a lot of people were like, I can't believe they don't look like refugees to me. They've got all this luggage. All these luggage everywhere. They have too much luggage. When I see people show up at the border, they don't have luggage. They've been walking for hundreds of miles. They don't have luggage. Well, that's because they don't show you the pictures of the people they fly in to cities all over the country from South American nations. And when they do that, guess what they have? Luggage. When you get on a plane, you bring your luggage. When you're trying to traverse 1,000 miles with some coyote, you're probably not, right, bringing your luggage. But, when you're on a plane, that's usually what they fill the bottom of the plane with, is luggage. By the way, same thing for a boat, and that's what we saw back in, 1900 at Ellis Island, people showing up with, luggage. We have the picture of, there it is, the picture of the luggage. That's 1900. That's not today. Now, it's funny because what we're told all the time is we're supposed to take millions of asylum seekers from nations like everything from Haiti to Honduras, all over, these Central and South American areas. And, some of that can be fine. We have accepted a lot of people with asylum claims over the years. And that's not necessarily, in fact, I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing when we do it the proper way. It's also not a requirement. We don't always have to grant asylum to everyone who comes. And in fact, like what we hear all the time, people going, well, the Afrikaners, so how could you let them in? They're wealthy and have luggage when you won't let in people who are victims of gang violence. It's important to understand this policy a little bit, though. It is different than what you think. It's not like, hey, I'm having a bad time at home. Hey, my economy at home sucks. Hey, I'm being harassed by a gang nearby. I need to come to the United States of America. That's not how the policy works. It's a two-step test to see if you can get asylum in this country. Here's what it is. You must have grounds for persecution. The grounds of persecution are very specific. Race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group. So you have these five different categories. Gang violence is not one of them. If you're being discriminated because of your race, if you're being discriminated because of your religion, if you're being discriminated because of your nationality, your political opinion, or because you're a membership in a particular social group, either a religious group or maybe some sexual persuasion, whatever the situation might be, those are the types of things that we allow asylum for. You know, certainly this is, you know, we dealt with Cuba in this way, right? People who didn't want to be communists were going to be killed by their government. And that's the problem. Here, we look at it, the same situation. If you think about the Afrikaners, you might not believe every claim that's gone down, but it very specifically has to do with their skin color and their particular social group. That is very, very specifically what it is. So they definitely check off that first box. The second box is government failure. And that is if your home government is unable or unwilling to protect these citizens or can't safely relocate them within their country. So again, if you're in, you know, some town in, you know, if you're in Mexico City and you're having all sorts of problems, if your country won't help you relocate to another part of the country, if there's no safe part of the country for you to go, then maybe you might be eligible if you check off that first box and that box. This is the situation exactly, precisely what is being accused of the South African government. They're not protecting the white Afrikaners because they don't care about them, frankly, and they want them to leave and they want to take their farmland. So that's been kind of the issue here. They kind of specifically hit these particular targets for an asylum claim. It's been granted that the president of the United States has kind of wide leeway to be able to kind of do that type of thing. And that's kind of where we are right now. Crime, and there's a lot of crime where I'm from, is not really a reason to get an asylum claim. And that's why many people who come with that excuse wind up getting rejected. What's bigger here, though, is the hypocrisy of the left, right? They want every single immigrant except the Afrikaners. Now, again, to state my position quite clearly, I really don't care what color you are. I don't really care all that much where you're coming from. Are you going to be a productive member of our society? Have you come with some sort of plan so we're not just living off the government dole? Did you come the right way, through the front door, legally? Were we able to background check you and make sure that you're not a criminal of some sort? You hit those things for me, I'm pretty much fine with you being here. Now, that's not always the case with the people on the right. Like, there's people who are more restrictionist on legal immigration than I am. However, we all sort of agree on the right, illegal immigration, bad. So don't do it. Don't fake asylum claims. Don't say you need an asylum claim when you don't actually need one. And if you're on the left, you're supposed to be welcoming people, welcoming victims, welcoming minority victims. And you might say, well, these white people, they're not minority victims. Yeah, they are. That's the thing. In that country, the white people are the minority. This is the one minority, apparently, the left doesn't like, which is kind of interesting. Apparently, we're standing up for some minorities and not others. That's the state of affairs. And all this kind of comes back to Donald Trump and his particular performance on the border. They know they have to chip away against his most popular pieces of his policy profile. They know to, you know, knock down that approval rating to get them to win the midterms. You have to go after those important things near the top of the policy profile. If you go after only things that are already unpopular, there might not be room to really to move them. If you go up and you say, hey, Donald Trump's doing a bad job on the border, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough sell to the American people because they can look at that chart like anybody can and see that it's at the all-time low. But that's the thing. You have to convince people some other way. You have to give them the sob stories. You have to give them these bad examples. You have to give them the mistakes that even, you know, the White House admits to if they make a mistake on a particular deportation. All of that has to build up to add doubt, not necessarily for you or I, who are probably pretty tough on the border, but for people who are in the middle and just like feel bad for these stories they see on the news. They need to create those situations. And they have to make it seem like, you know, look, white South Africans, there's not a lot of sympathy for them, right? There was certainly a period where many of them participated in very bad behavior in that particular nation. That doesn't mean today's situation's going on. Those people weren't even born, a lot of them, when that stuff was going on. We're in a totally different world now, and now those people are the minority, and those people are being harassed by not only their government, but their fellow citizens. That is, and the government has no reason and no incentive whatsoever to actually protect them from those things. That's where we are today. And that shouldn't be controversial. It always is, because that's the way the world works, apparently, when you're talking about the left and Donald Trump. But it really doesn't have to be that way. All right, I want to talk about Joe Biden and all of the stuff going on in the media with all these books coming out. We're going to get Rob Eno in here coming up next.
Stu does America.
Sometimes life's most important moments deserve a little extra support. Yes, confidence matters everywhere, but especially behind closed doors. In the bedroom department, Blue Chew has got you covered. They've been helping guys step up their game for years with scientifically proven results. Blue Chew Max combines the active ingredients of Viagra and Cialis into one convenient chewable tablet, fast-acting and long-lasting for when it matters most. Process couldn't be simpler. You just sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with their licensed medical providers. Once you're approved, you get your prescription, which is made in the USA, to arrive discreetly at your door. No awkward doctor visits, no pharmacy lines, just results. Listeners can try their first month of Blue Chew completely free with the promo code STU. Just pay $5 shipping. The promo code is STU at BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com. Get a free month right now with the promo code STU. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. I'm joined now by Rob Eno, brand new managing editor of Blaze News. Congratulations, Rob.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Oh, it's exciting. Looking forward to working with the team and, you know, focusing on things that our readers want to read.
Are you going to turn everything liberal in the coverage?
That's exactly it. We are going, I mean, I'm from Massachusetts, so we're just going to go completely socialist.
All right, good. There you go.
Yeah, no, we're going to focus on MAGA and MAHA and, you know, the news of the administration and making sure that we're telling that story, as well as some of the lifestyle things that people have started to see at Blaze News. Is this celebrity doing this to this celebrity, more How to Live, conservative brands, things like that.
So. All right. Lots of really good things to come, just like all these great books that are now coming out.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. We went over the list of them earlier this week. There's at least four. I think there's four plus maybe a couple of others. I think Selena Zito has a book that kind of covers this as well from maybe a more sane perspective. But actually, I will say most of them have pretty much the same thesis, which is the administration really did know that Joe Biden had lost it, and they just weren't telling us.
Right. And of course, they didn't know. The people in the media that were with them every single day that right. could see it, that had a 3 o'clock in the afternoon lid called because Joe didn't have his meds and couldn't stay up past 3 p.m. You know, of course, they had nothing to do with it, and they didn't know, right? Mm-hmm. That's what these books are. It's just so crazy. It's the media acting shocked, like the inspector in Casablanca saying, there's gambling going on in here. I didn't know there was gambling going on in here, you know? It's just, it's insane.
Well, you know, I've been somewhat torn, maybe more than others on the right on this one, because I look at the two possibilities. What world do we live in? Do we live in the world that we're in, right, with these books coming out and we're hearing about this stuff, but reporters that didn't necessarily cover it at the time? Or the alternate, which is really, I don't look at journalists doing their job perfectly the way I want as a possibility. The other possibility here is everyone kind of like acts like it didn't happen. No, none of these books come out. We never learn this stuff. And like, I think between those two choices, I like where we are. I like the fact that they, even if they're late, at least they're writing this stuff and uncovering it.
I look at it as they're trying to cover their butt, right? Because this stuff is going to come out eventually.
How?
You've got presidential records that have to be released at some point in time in the future. You know, history is not going to be kind on what they did during the Biden administration. So eventually it will come out. It might not come out in their lifetimes, might not come out in my lifetime. But eventually for history, it will come out. And I see this more as people trying to cover their butts because someone was going to leak this stuff. And the media is, you know, people like Jake Tapper, who 100% knew what was going on. Because remember every time we would bring something up, and that was just, oh, I can't believe that concern trolling. I can't believe that they would say that. I mean, the guy's literally falling down.
Right.
Oh, no, I can't believe that they would say that. He's sniffing, you know, 8-year-old girl's hair. Oh, that's just a still photograph, and that's not really what was happening.
Right.
Right. It's insane.
A cheap fake, Rob.
Yeah, cheap fake. That was the word, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think my distinction here, it might be a little bit different, but I think we're pretty much saying the same thing, is I do believe there's a CYA effort going on here, but I believe it's more from the aides and the people inside the White House. They're going to these reporters. They're trying to say, wasn't my fault. I saw this and I tried to do something about it. One of the people in the Jake Tapper book is like, oh, I had to leave the office because I didn't think he would win. You know, they're all kind of trying to set up their next consulting job by saying, this wasn't my fault. The journalistic side of this, though, is I think, like, you know, like Jake Tapper was in an interview and he was basically saying, look, they lied to us. They lied to us as reporters. They lied to their own staffers. They lied to people in Congress. I think all of that's actually true.
Right.
The problem is when someone in the White House lies to you, you have a way to handle it, which is look at what's going on and say, hey, I'm going to keep fighting for the information. This isn't true. I'm going to keep asking and nose to the grindstone. Alex Thompson, his co-author, I think legitimately did that the last couple of years of the Biden administration. He was all over that story. The other opportunity is just to say, oh, well, the side I want to win said it. So therefore, I'm done. And that is what 99% of journalists did. And that's the problem, I think, here when it comes to the
difference. You're absolutely right. Alex Thompson did. Axios, you know, tries to hold both sides accountable there. The person that runs Axios can be a little bit interesting when he talks about people like us and the alternative media. But, you know, there are good reporters, right? I worked with a reporter in Massachusetts that I uncovered something about the gubernatorial administration that was a Democrat. And he sat down with me and we went through and he said, you know what, Rob, you're right. And to this day, the governor's chief of staff said, why did you ever listen to that guy? And he says, because he was right. They don't like to get lied to unless they're purely ideological. Yeah. And far too many of them are purely ideological. They will say stuff now, like Donald Trump is not listening to a Supreme Court ruling, while during the Biden administration, when the Biden administration continued to try and get rid of people's student loans after the Supreme Court told them not to, would say, oh, it's a different way that they're doing it, so it's not the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Right? They would make excuses to cover up. And that's, I think, the real story. And if these books aren't telling the story of how the media was complicit in this, I think they're half-truths.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, you have to have a That is a big part of the story. It's what their job's supposed to be. And, you know, I think it's a tough job when your side is the one screwing up, right? Like, if your side's like, and again, if these people are all human. They have their ideological beliefs. In theory, that's fine, right? Like, I mean, you know, like, we could send conservative reporters into the New York Times if they were allowed to enter the building at any point. They could probably write really good stories about both sides. That's okay. But when you, there's that thing that kind of confirms what you want, that you want to Joe Biden to win. You wanted Kamala Harris to win. So when you have that in your head already, you're seeing everything through that prism. So when Donald Trump does something bad, and we see journalists do their job with Trump all the time. If Trump says something that they say they think is a lie, they don't just go, oh, wow, well, Stephen Miller said it, so let me just write the story.
Right.
That doesn't happen when it's on the right, nor should it happen.
Right.
Now, they're also unfair to Trump, as we've covered many times, and I know you've covered on Blaze, but that's the part. It's like, take the same steps, go through the same process, be skeptical of both sides when they're in power. That's what you're supposed to do.
It's absolutely what you're supposed to do. And with the Biden administration, it was so clear. It was so clear that he was not all there. I mean,
obviously,
we made the jokes about always having the ice cream because the ice cream helps Alzheimer's and all that kind of stuff, whatever, whoever came up with that stupid thing, right? But it's absolutely undeniably true that unless he didn't take questions from reporters often. If he did, we had pictures from places like Getty with all of the questions that are going to be asked and the bullet points of how to answer them right on the thing. You know what I mean? Like, the media was so complicit that they gave the questions ahead of time and stayed on script. And then Biden would say, oh, you know, I'm not supposed to answer that. I'm going to get in trouble. Like, because he was being completely managed. And that's the part, again, I like that these books are coming out. I think that these books coming out show that we were right about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't, and I haven't read none of us have read Jake Tapper's book yet because it's not out.
Tuesday, yeah.
Comes out, you know, when I read that book, I really want it to go after the media as well, because if it's not self-reflection, you don't change, right? And I think that that's the problem, is there's not a lot of self-reflection. They take the wrong, they learn the wrong lessons from these things, and then they're doomed to repeat them again.
What's the right posture with the media? Because, I mean, we could sit here and just only point out the negative things that they do. But, I mean, as you point out, that's not necessarily going to get anybody better, right? They're not going to improve. They're not going to listen to us because we're yelling at them really loud. You know, Steve Krakow, our friend of the show, who's over Megyn Kelly's executive producer, wrote a book a year or two ago about the media. And he always says, like, you know, I'm rooting for the media. I want them to be good. I want them to succeed.
Absolutely, right.
It really would be a great thing for our country if we had a media that tried.
Right.
It doesn't seem like we have that. And, you know, I don't know whether the right approach is to just call them out on everything, you know, to try to. When I do see good examples like Alex Thompson, though, I think it's worth encouraging them.
Yeah, absolutely. What you want the media to do is stick to the facts.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to say that something is an opinion if it's an opinion.
Yep. Which that's fine.
PolitiFact is PolitiOpinion.
Yeah.
Right. They get experts to say what the facts are. And those experts say things like, COVID didn't start in a lab in Wuhan, China.
Right.
And if they say it, then it's the gospel. And if you say something different, then you don't believe in science. Right. Those are the sorts of places where the media goes completely off the rails. And when you say, to get back to the Biden thing, when you say it looks like he's losing a step, it looks like he's not there. Why does he have the questions ahead of time? Why are they calling a lid at 3 p.m.? Why doesn't he talk to the media? I mean, he had, what, 4, 5, maybe 6 press conferences, if that?
Amazing.
And Trump invites people in every day. And you have people like, and I think I don't get paid unless I bring up his name. Mm. So you have people like Brian Stelter saying, oh, no, you know, he answered questions off the cuff in these gaggles all the time. There's tons of places where he's done that.
Yeah, they did that. They said that over and over and over again.
Right. But they whisk him away and he doesn't really answer the questions. Right. I mean, that's the, he doesn't sit down for 10 minutes or, I mean, you catch Donald Trump on his way to Air Force One, you could have a 20-minute impromptu press conference.
You can't shut him up.
Right.
He's going to be talking constantly, no matter
what.
Which
is part of the problem. But.
Part of the problem, but also, I think, a good development, right? Like, for the country.
Yeah.
Like, I want a president who's just out there talking all the time. Because, you know, God forbid something like that happens to Trump at some point. And look, he's almost in his 80s, too. I mean, who knows? If it happens, we're going to notice it because he's
Absolutely.
Out there all the time talking about it. Let me ask this last one. Looking at the media generally, we all know the problems. We talk about them all the time. How much of that is ideology, like they're progressives, they're liberals, they want liberals to win? And how much of it is just groupthink? Like the COVID example was a good example of that at some level, right? Like it started with maybe bubbles of liberalism. We're going to believe the you know, the authorities. A lot of that, I think, builds on itself because everyone around them saying the same thing. And they're like, if I come out and say, wait a minute, maybe kids should be able to go to school, you're going to be shot down. And only a few authors, Zweig is one of them, were able to come out and say, hey, no, this isn't right at the time. Most people kind of just got sucked in the mainstream media to whatever the groupthink position was.
Right, but is that the same thing? Is the groupthink there because the other side can't be right?
Yeah.
Right? So is the groupthink just the same manifestation of, if I say that kids should be in school, am I agreeing with the crazy right-wing nut job that says it's just a cold and that we treated it wrongly
right.
to begin with and we went completely overboard?
They'll even admit that sometimes. They'll be like, well, we couldn't say it because Trump was saying that.
Absolutely.
That's not an okay excuse, actually.
No, it absolutely, 100%. And then they make things up, right? Like Biden said wrong things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump got out of a meeting where they were talking about using ultraviolet light to kill, if you circulated the blood through a machine, mm-hmm. to kill the COVID vaccine, to kill the COVID mm-hmm. thing, right?
The virus,
there
yeah.
were people that were talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
He said that, and somehow it was, he wants you to ingest Lysol and stick a light up your butt.
Right.
Which is not what he said. He just had a meeting with people that had interesting technology that he was talking about.
Right, like you could have a charitable. I mean, he didn't state that exactly right, but you
right.
could have easily had a charitable interpretation of that. They just never go that direction.
Right.
All right, well, we got to take a break. Rob, you know, Blaze News Managing Editor, congratulations
Thank
once
you.
Again. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and we can follow you on social media. Where do they go?
At Rob Eno.
All right, do that. We'll be back in a second. I have sad and tragic news. The House impeachment effort for Donald Trump is dead, at least so far. They're already trying to impeach him. Now House Democrats are backing off, forcing an impeachment vote after objections from party leaders. This is Sri Thanadar from Michigan, who I've definitely heard of before. And I'm not just seeing that name for the first time. They're worried about, they were going to try to impeach him on taking the jet from Qatar. Part of it was that. It's like he hasn't even taken it. it was like a news story for a day. Let's impeach the guy. They're obviously, if they get control of the House, they're going to impeach him. They'll come up with something. Now, who will be the leader of that movement? We don't know yet. AOC's chances of leading Democrats compared to Kamala Harris poll from Newsweek. They're covering a coefficient poll. A fascinating, like, who's the face of the Democratic Party? Who is it? Who would you say? I think a lot of people would say AOC, America's favorite, bartender congresswoman. She is number one on this list. She's tied, though. I'll tell you who she's tied with in a second. But she's at 26%. What's shocking is below that is Bernie Sanders with 12% of the vote and Jasmine Crockett with 8%. Those are three people with almost the exact same policies, almost the exact same policy profile, which is socialist, right? You have three socialists here at 46%. This is not a party where socialism is the fringe anymore. This is like the mainstream of the party. You add those people up, you're way, way, way left of what we thought was normal back in the day. By the way, the person who is tied with two other high people up there, tied with AOC at 26%, is no one. And right below that at 22% is other. So this is not a good poll for Democrats, because they look at this and they say, well, wait, who is the face of the party? I mean, you know, is it AOC really? I mean, she's out there. She's loud. She's kind of stupidly flailing around on social media all the time. So that's something. But like selecting the dumbest person from your Zumba class to be the face of your party is not necessarily the right move, right? I mean, that's not what you're supposed to do. That is kind of what the Democrats are doing here, though, and they have no other way to go. They can't keep anybody who might be tied to the mainstream anywhere near the face of the party status. You know, Josh Shapiro, he's Jewish. That's not allowed. Right? You have too much of a factor in the Hamas wing of the party. So you have to name somebody who's going to call Israelis all genocidal maniacs. That limits a lot of the people who can at least appeal to the middle on some issues, right? Like AOC really has a tough time doing that at all, because she's just so far left. She also has a tough time identifying garbage disposals, which is another issue for someone who, if they're going to be the face of your party, you'd think you'd want them to be familiar with basic household appliances. But, you know, they certainly don't have that going for them, unfortunately. Before, it was like Nancy Pelosi, and she just had like lots of different kinds of expensive ice cream in her freezer, multiple freezers that she had. And like, sure, it was elitist, but we can all kind of relate with wanting more ice cream. Not knowing what the garbage disposal is, that just seems like you're a moron. And by the way, that is exactly what she is. Your investment choices matter beyond just building wealth. They reflect what you believe about America's future. Constitution Wealth gets this. They specialize in helping folks align their portfolios with their principles. No fancy jargon, just straightforward strategies for putting your money where your values are. It doesn't make sense to fund companies pushing agendas that undermine traditional American values when you have better options. Their team offers a practical approach to what people are calling the parallel economy. Smart investing that doesn't compromise what matters to you. Take control of the future of America. Don't get complacent. Visit constitutionwealth.com/blaze for a free consultation. constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Check it out now. constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Constitution Wealth is a registered investment advisor. You should review Constitution Wealth's disclosures at constitutionwealth.com to understand their services and fees. All investing involves risk, including the risk of loss. I am a client of the firm, and this is a paid endorsement. My opinions, however, as always, are my own. Protesters! They're being removed. You see a bunch of people being taken out here from the RFK Jr. hearing. Who's left? Who's screaming still? Ben! Old guy in the middle. Ben! Ben of Ben and Jerry's. He's screaming about government. Governments buy bombs! Congress pays for bombs.
Members of the audience are reminded disruptions will not
Dry
be permitted
monkey.
While the committee conducts
Congress
its business.
Pays for bombs.
Capitol Police are asked to remove.
So a couple things about this video. First of all, if you watch RFK Jr. turn around when that protests start, You could tell the guy's a Kennedy because he's, I think, sure he's about to be attacked. It really was. You could tell he was really startled by that. Ben, who has, you know, been in an interesting time recently where he's, you know, getting some love, I guess, from the right over his Ukraine stance. He's kind of an anti-war guy, has been an anti-war guy for a very long time. But generally speaking, has been known as very, 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 very left. By the way, so is RFK Jr. So now we have a leftist who's going on, you know, he was just on with Tucker Carlson the other day. They were talking about that particular issue. So, you know, we got a guy who goes on with Tucker Carlson, who's now protesting the Trump administration, an official who is also on the left, RFK Jr. It's very difficult to understand, frankly, where we are anymore. I can't keep track of the lines. I have no idea. More from and I guess, would Ben and Jerry be in favor of Starbucks or against them because they're an evil corporation? I don't know. They're a left corporation. He's got a left corporation. I'm not sure how he would feel about Starbucks, but the employees of Starbucks apparently not that happy. More than 1,000 Starbucks baristas are going on strike to protest the new dress code, which seems to be just a black shirt. Like, you can wear jeans in a black shirt or khakis in a black shirt. And I guess they gave them a couple of black shirts, but they really don't want that. Now, I don't know. It's interesting because I thought they kind of wore uniforms. Someone told me earlier that, like, actually, no, it's they wear the aprons are all the same, but they can wear what they want to wear under it. Now they're going to have to change that. Well, I mean, I don't know. It does seem like that's kind of standard fare for a job in that particular industry that you're going to wear a uniform, but they're very upset about that. So we'll watch that very closely. Also, an amazing story, an air traffic control hotline that was created between the Pentagon and Reagan Washington National Airport has been broken since yesterday, last week, 5 weeks ago. No, 2022. We are currently in, I should remind you, 2025. In between 2022 and 2025, I made a documentary about these exact problems, all the hassles and pathetic failures of the FAA and air traffic control. It is available as part of your Blaze TV subscription, or honestly, it's also on YouTube as well. If you want to go to Blaze TV, we'd appreciate it because that's how we fund these things, how we make them. But that's blazetv.com/stew, promo code is stew. Or you can go to youtube.com and search there. I think it's on Blaze TV's page, technically, so go check that out. You can, of course, subscribe to my show while you're there. But check it out. It's called Countdown to the Next Aviation Disaster, and it is available now on Blaze TV and YouTube. Okay, so here's what happened. One thing that is pretty consistent with dolphins is that they have heads. Okay, most of them swimming around have heads. Recently, one was discovered without a head, and that was kind of a problem. You might say to yourself, I'm not a detective. I'm not Ace Ventura pet detective, but like probably like a shark bit his head off, right? Like that's kind of where you would go. The feds are saying no. They think a human being decapitated the dolphin. Now, that's a bizarre enough story. It gets a little stranger. First of all, they did a study on the dolphin, and it was carrying a bacteria that can be transferred to people through direct contact, which is kind of important. So someone might have whatever that illness is that they could get. But the bigger issue here is they've now offered a $20,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of the person who decapitated the dolphin. Now, I did do some, I'm a thinker. I'm a researcher. Did some searching online and found that the top penalty for improper disposal of an animal is $2,000. So I want to say this very clearly to the people of North Carolina. I decapitated the dolphin. Give me the $20,000 reward. I'll pay the $2,000 fine, and we're all set.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer?